Hey everybody, thanks for joining us this week on BSD Now. We're actually not here this week. Shock, we've been mentioning it for a while, but we are at EuroBSDCon out on the beach at Malta, hopefully. So this week we've got just an interview for you today. We'll be back next week with normal episodes and lots of stories from the conference, and we'll try to get some more interviews there. So hopefully a lot of new material for you guys to see when we get back. But for today, though, we're going to talk to Devin Teske about his work with BSD install, BSD config, and all the other interesting things he's been hacking on lately. So go ahead and join us for the show and sit back, relax, enjoy what we have prepared here for you.
BSD Now, Episode 4, for September 25th, 2013. I'm your host, Alan Jude.
And I'm Chris Moore.
As Chris mentioned earlier, this episode, we're actually in Malta at EuroBSDCon, so all we have for you this week is an interview with Devin Teske. So we should move straight into that. This week, we're joined by Devin Teske, the Senior FreeBSD Architect and System Integration Specialist at FIS Global and a FreeBSD Source Committer. Hello, Devin. And Chris is here as well.
Hello.
Hey, Devin. Yes. Good to have you with us.
Hey, nice to meet you. Nice to meet you
all. So we'll start with our first question. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in FreeBSD?
Well, I'm a longtime hacker, been programming since the 1990s, and I was hired by Vicor in 2005, and I've been working there for about 8 years, and we're now known as FIS Global.
Yeah. Very, very cool.
Hey,
well, hey, speaking of your work with FreeBSD, going on to the next question here, what tools in the base did you have a hand in creating? What can we blame you for?
You can blame me for the bootloader for many years. I wrote a custom bootloader for where I work, and Julian Elisher said, hey, we should... He showed it at a conference and said, hey, maybe we should get this in the base. And I've been able to be blamed for that for years. But thank God it's been bugless and smooth. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Is there anything else in the base?
Well, I took on some maintenance of sysinstall. I've been the last committer to touch that. So if anything breaks in sysinstall, you can, whatever that's worth, you can tell me about that. A TZ setup, our old friend that sets a time zone. I've been patching that. Garrett Wollman reviewed some of those patches. Let's see. I've got some more stuff in base coming out in 9.2.
That's about a later question.
Sure. Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think that's getting ahead.
So you did some work on BSD install as well, the replacement for sysinstall?
I've done a little bit of work on BSD install. I think I'm the unofficial new maintainer of it. I have a lot of plans
for it. Yes, tell us a bit about your plans for it.
Ooh, well, it doesn't have support for internationalization. It doesn't do parallel concurrent installs of the distributions. You can't script the distribution install other than actually fork execing to the utility. You know, it's got a lot of work. We're going to take it there. And I've got a lot of plans for it.
Cool.
Well, cool. One thing we definitely want to know, and everyone's asking us, is when will we have a ZFS on root option in the default install?
Well, Pavel Davidek, he shared with me his ZFS conf code, which is a huge shell script. It's over 1,000 lines of code.
Oh, wow.
He uses Dialog, and BSD install, BSD config, they all use Dialog. So this is perfect. I'm going to drop it in as a module so that it'll be executed, and you'll be able to do all that in BSD install and BSD config, both pre-install, during your install, and post-install, too. That's really important to Pavel and I.
Oh, yeah. That'll be very cool. Well, how about full disk encryption as well? Is that on the roadmap?
Yes. It'd be great if we had ZFS encryption in there, but maybe with Isilon someday, but we'll use Jelly for now.
Well, yeah, I guess Pavel has a bunch of that stuff for the appliance he builds, right? That's where I think that ZFS conf stuff came from. The food.
Yeah, I think so. Chris, do you know?
I don't know.
I saw a little bit about how he sets it up with, he did some patches to the bootloader and stuff and Gpart to make flags like boot this partition but only once and stuff. There's a he did a talk on it at BSD camp.
Oh, very cool.
Well, I think that I can be the conduit to bring all that stuff in. And so I think I've built a nice framework that everybody can then jump on top of and then start adding the things that they know that they're expert they're subject experts in.
Well, are those things like the ZFS stuff you're talking about? Is that something you're looking at for 10 possibly, or a little later?
Well, as you know, the release engineering decided to drop 10 on us. So I'm looking at the timeline. I was actually thinking first quarter 2014 we start beta testing some of that stuff. So that's after 10 release. Okay.
So maybe 10.1 then. That'd be the first release cut with those. Sure.
Yeah. It also depends on adoption rate. You know, when I go to VBSDCon, I'm going to demonstrate BSD config and how it's meant for more developers to jump on and maintain it, because each little module is its own little sandbox, and you get this wonderful, great API that goes with it. So it's not like sysinstall where it's this big monolithic thing. I want a whole lot of I want a good adoption rate. So I'm going to go to VBSDCon and try to pimp this thing out so that we can people can see how much work I put into it, so that it's clean.
Is that a presentation you're giving at VBSDCon?
Yeah, he's one of the speakers.
Oh, fantastic! Great. Another excuse/reason to get out to VBSDCon if you can.
Yes. So yeah, if you go to VBSDCon.com, they have an abstract of Devin's talk and a little bit more background on him and so on. It's quite useful.
Thank you.
So Devin, go ahead and tell us about your new tools here, BSD config, SysRC, and FDPV. Go ahead and give us a little rundown of various things all those do.
Excellent. So let's see. For BSD config, wow, that's a 33,000 lines of code now. It's new in 9.2 release. So a minor release is introducing, you know, 5 digits of new code.
That's quite a big change.
And it is. You know, it gives me great pleasure when I'm on a mailing list and says, how do you validate an IPv4 or IPv6 address in shell? And they're like, well, you could do all this with awk and grep and stuff like that. And here I come just screaming in through the room, like whispering, hey, there's this thing over here called BSD config, and it's 30,000 lines of shell, and it's going to do what you want. Oh, and here's the API call you want. And they're like, oh, somebody commented, looks up, hey, there's a warp engine in the room now. Wow. It just appeared out overnight. So, but over 30 months of development. So a lot of work went into this. And what it is I noticed that sysinstall had all this great scripting abilities. Sysinstall could do many things. But even more so, it had inside of it more functionality that was not scriptable. So I said, wow, okay, so here's a chance. Sysinstall is dead. Long live, wait, what? BSD install? No, let's go and take that post-install functionality that was missing, rewrite it to where it's scriptable, rewrite it to where it's in shell. So if there was an API call that you liked in sysinstall that wasn't callable through the install.cfg file, hey, now it's shell script, and it's all 100% callable. The whole API, everything. And I've gone through to the, you know, minor nits to actually conflate the namespace, so you actually don't have subshell after subshell after subshell. You know, everything is actually tunable.
So what kind of functionalities does it add?
Let's see. Right now, it's very much a UX API, but it has two layers in the API. There is an API call for everything that you want to do that is faceless, and then there is an API call that has a dialogue one face, which is beautiful if you pass dash capital X, or it'll just switch out dialogue one for X dialogue one from ports. So it's X11 and command line, and if you happen to write anything that looks or acts like dialogue, you can add a third interface just by changing dollar dialogue. So it's got a lot of functionality in there.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Also, it abstracts a lot of the work away. So if you write a BSD config module, you don't need to know how to become root. You can run as non-root, and when you need to escalate to become root, you say F must be root, and then it becomes root, which is important because when you're an X11 application, you can't just throw up an X term and say prompt for a pseudo credential and then I don't know. How are you going to do that? I've solved it. There's X11 dialogues that have multi-prompts for username and password in a single dialog, and then it will prompt you, and then use all this complicated stuff on the back end to validate it.
That's really cool.
But BSD config lets you do things like install packages that was functionality that was in sysinstall that isn't in BSD install?
Absolutely. And because it's all shell, whereas with sysinstall, you had to either create an install.cfg that said, package add this, 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 and this, one for each line. Now, in shell script, you can just say, have a for loop for each item in this loop, or however you want to actually get the list, and just say, package add dollar package.
Nice.
Wow. Very cool. How about the sysrc stuff as well?
Sysrc is our nod from FIS to how do you control a cloud of machines. It's just rc.conf on steroids. It's management of rc.conf on steroids. And that is from the command line, modify a setting. It will figure out which file it's in, change the file, and also if it's in an earlier file, let's see, it's very smart. It's nuclear reactor-based editing of rc.conf. I can't put it any more succinctly.
So it does multiple files like the rc.conf.d/appname and stuff?
Yes, and more so, anything that's key equal value pair with supporting quotes, single quotes, and basic shell syntax like loader.conf can be managed by this.
That would have been pretty very helpful to know before I had to write all kinds of weird stuff in my Puppet to manage these exact things.
Oh, yeah. You say sysrc-f/boot/loader.conf and key equal new value.
Does it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's definitely going to come in handy for
to be used by Puppet. Does it have one that can tell me what a current setting is? Okay.
Yes. That's its default output form. In fact, if you just treat it like sysctl, you can't go wrong. Oh. I've tried to mirror the sysctl flags verbatim.
Oh, wow. That's definitely going to be handy.
Wow.
So, you know, sysctl defaults to outputting to key colon space value. If you say dash e, just like with sysctl, it comes out in key equal value for a shell-like output.
That's perfect.
yeah, brilliant. How about the... good.
Yeah.
I was going to say, how about FDPV as well?
That's under the category of one of my secret projects, which is that... BSD config is almost complete. In ports, it's at 0.9. And I call it 0.9 because I was looking at the sysinstall post-install configuration menu as I got to fill out all of these. So 90%, 0.9, gets you what we have today. And there's two things missing. And that is the distribution selection menu, which is currently handled by BSD install. And the other one, I can't remember, not important. So I went and looked, okay, I've got to finish up this portion of BSD config. I need a new BSD install, what does sysinstall call it? Dist extract. So I need a new dist extract. So first of all, I always try to leverage the work of others. It's being a team player, and it's going out there and finding out, hey, you know, how do other people want to use this stuff? So for years, and we're talking like 7-8 years ago, I was polling people on how people use sysinstall. This is before the death of sysinstall. I was redesigning sysinstall, and then it's dead. So now I'm working on BSD install now, and I have all this feedback about how people use it. So I went and go look at dist fetch and dist extract, those two pair. And I'm like, well, there's no data/rate info. So now I start redesigning the thing, and now we have FDPV, which is a prototype for what I think that BSD install can be better as. What can replace BSD install. So it actually tries to look like it, but rather than saying, okay, we're going to use libdialog's mixed gauge widget, which has its intricate bugs and problems, I looked at something that can be used in X11. And for me, that's important, is that, okay, so we have BSD config, and it's 100% both dialog and xdialog, the whole interface, every part of it. But BSD install does some things that those interfaces can't do, which is, how do you have many progress bars? How do you have, data/rate info? How do you wrangle all this? And FDPV is my answer to that, which is FDPV is a layer on top of libdialog or dialog or xdialog. So you get three choices depending on flags that you pass it. And currently, what it does is if you're on libdialog, it's beautiful. It's got an interface that looks like what BSD install has today, except you get data rate info like sysinstall had. But we're using a library that's going to be Grand Central Dispatch based with threading. So I look at BSD install, I see many progress bars, and I'm like, pending, wasted time. Mm-hmm. I could be doing those concurrently. And then I think, okay, now I've got this tool, FDPV, who works on the principle of give me streams, give me labels to display next to the progress bars, and I will present the whole interface for you. I'll even launch the threads to shuffle the I.O. All you also have to tell me is, well, what do you want the I.O. to be pumped into? And then mm-hmm. you just tell a command, and then it clicks.
Well, oh, that's definitely cool.
This fetch is going to be doing execute tar to get those streams as a standard in. Why not package add? So now I'm thinking, okay, well, we can take this FTPV utility and make it the basis of not just disfetch and disextract, but also package ng, so that package ng can have parallelized concurrent installation. And the beauty of Grand Central Dispatch is, as I was speaking with Jordan Hubbard, and over lunch he was telling me that's what you want to do, because it'll take concepts of the load of the machine, how many cores it has, and all the concurrency limits that it feels are best for the machine. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine 10 years down the road, we can be installing 100 packages at once. You go to install Xorg, and instead of it taking an hour, you're taking 10 minutes, because everything that's not interdependent, as each worker thread goes, says, give me a new package. He says, okay, I'm going to give you the one that I can install next. Now, there's going to be pauses in there, because eventually you're
going
fill all the
ones. It's like a bottleneck. Poudre has...
But maximum concurrency will be achieved.
Yeah, well, because that's the other thing is, while you're installing a package, at least one of the packages should be downloading in the background, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you only have so much internet bandwidth, you can only download so many at a time, but while you're extracting or even just, it does checksumming on everything, right? It's doing the SSH256 hash. While it's doing that, there should be something else happening, right?
Yes. What I've conceptualized for the checksumming, because of course we don't want to have any value loss. As I take all the work from other people around me and I try to just enhance it, we don't want to have any loss of features or anything like that, or quality. So what I envision is, okay, so how do you have a progress bar? And I forgot to mention, one of the most important things that I want to bring back is inline extract. See, BSD install does disfetch is one thing, goes to a temporary file system, which is, oh, wait, what if your file system's not writable? Which is a big thing in the embedded world. Or what if your disk is so small that you can't have the temporary file and the unpacked contents at the same time? So I want to bring back inline extract. So marry, bring together disfetch and disextract. This utility, FTPV, allows that. Now, how are we going to do a checksum on something that's never going to hit the disk? And I think of two ways you do that. So we have our Grand Central Dispatch worker threads. And as each worker thread wakes up and says, okay, give me a new file to work on, or give me a stream to work on, it's going to have to do two things. If you enable the feature to do a checksumming, you tell it what type of digest it's, what message digest it actually is going to calculate. And we've got to hold back the data. So we know what the size of the file is going to be already, and we can tell it that. So it can do a test on a malloc or an mmap to do the memory map of the file. Now, if this fails, we don't have enough room to store it in memory. Of course, that's the fallback. We try to do the file first. We try to save it to disk first. It's cheap and easy, but it should be configurable. Yep. Because if you're an embedded system and you know ahead of time that there's not going to be enough room to unpack this thing after you've already downloaded it, we need to do the checksum inline. So what we do is we mmap a file, store the whole thing in memory, do the checksum, and if it fails, we never even fork off that instance to get it in standard in. So if the tar is there, it's not going to even get one byte if it fails the checksum. Now, in the interface, is for the user experience, I'm thinking, okay, so we have a progress bar. It fills 50% of the way, and then it does a checksum, and then it's got another 50% to go to get to actually send the data off to the POSIX bond program.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely really cool. Yeah,
I first heard about FTPV actually when you were talking to me about it as a replacement for the progress bar I was using in the patch for ZX for doing ZFS replication. Mm-hmm. And I was like, being able to build it like that so you could see all the snapshots that you want to replicate and watch them go by would be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the latest commit I just did now has full thread info in the it's all just a show right now, the FDBV code. But, you know, it takes 5,000 lines of code in order to just present the UI from the inputs. The full input and full output are done. The only thing that's not done right now is the actual shuffling of data and the actual Brand Central dispatch. I have one more step maybe to go, and that is that in just like Package NG style, have it both as a usable application from the shell and a library that you can hook into with C. So that way, if you need to do something, you know, that you just can't do with the utility, which is going to, if you're going to have multiple streams, the only clean way I found to do it is with FIFOs. So you have an FTP fetch, go to a FIFO, pass as an argument to the application, which is then opened.
Oh, that's going to be definitely very powerful for people to start leveraging.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I get all giddy because I look at other operating systems and I'm thinking, has anybody ever done this before? Yum, apt-get, all these applications. They don't do parallel concurrent installation of non-interdependent packages.
And it seems like checking the dependencies and stuff, that all that code already exists as part of Poudrier because it's all written in shell.
Yeah, it manages to figure it out all ahead of time.
So our next question was, cool. Is there any chance of us seeing the boot menus replaced so that they're not written in Forth?
Sorry, that was one of mine.
Oh, you had to throw that in there. That's
right?
Fuel on the fire.
Is that anything you think may happen down the road?
I've heard talks in the chat about Lua. You know, there's something I just have to love about... I didn't know a lick of Forth, and I went to this job, and I said, well, dang it, I need the ability to toggle to a different kernel. No, I need field engineers with the ability to toggle to a different kernel. So I went down this book. Actually, my coworker had two Forth books on his desk. I picked them up, I read them both, and I didn't understand Forth still. I went on the web, and I still didn't understand Forth. So I said, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to boot into the loader, and I'm just going to play with it. And you know what? It clicked. It's my TI-89 calculator. Duh, it's a reverse Polish notation language. And then once I had the interactive, I was like, okay, once I can do 2-2 plus, now I understand that that's 4 on the stack. Okay, now I got it. And then, you know, what was it? I don't know, 15,000 lines of Forth later, now we've got what we got now. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's absolutely bugless. And it's tiny. The Forth interpreter, the FICL library that's in the C code, is so small. And that's a heritage to where we came from. And maybe it's a heritage to where we're going, maybe with embedded, because embedded is kind of like starting over where I386 started, I think, maybe. Small memory limits and everything. Lua could be a way to get around that if everything is nice and small. But I love the esoteric part of Forth and the fact that I could pick it up in a weekend.
Right, but I guess Chris's example is he wanted to be able to get a list of the ZFS data sets so that you could choose which one to boot off of.
Oh.
And
well, if we're not moving away from Forth, I actually have code that's in the current Forth that's actually modeled to do that. Now, if AVG and Av and I ever get a chance to sit down, all it's going to take is having the C layer and the FICL code have a set code that generates some environment variables, which are then picked up by my layer of Forth, enters the menu. Right now, I was talking to Jordan Hubbard, and he envisions long, massive scrolling lists of hitting page down or whatever. And I told him, well, you know, you're kind of safe from that. I could only support 8 devices currently. But I can filter that on 8 UFS devices, 8 ZFS devices, 8 whatever. But, you know, you can't have like 3,000 snapshots and have to scroll through that yet.
Sure.
Yeah. But, you know, I imagine 30 lines of C maybe could get this going.
Oh, that would be really cool to have natively.
LSZFS command.
Mm-hmm.
And what's in the kernel for LSZFS is what I imagine just basically taking that and saying, okay, we need to generate these environment variables which are viewable by the FICL layer.
I mean,
the Forth code.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, we're not that far off.
So now Chris will have an answer for when people harp on him for using Grub.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That's what I like to say is, you know, when you see what's coming out with 9.2, you know, secrets, then maybe you won't be so judgmental about Forth.
There you go. You got to convince me, man. Yeah. Well, are there any other secret projects you've been working on lately?
I was on a part of a secret panel of something that got into 9.2 that people that have been watching the release candidates know what I'm talking about. Maybe it's kind of
I was going to say, I noticed that in RC4, it got turned off.
Yes. Yeah, no. There was some concern from Core, or actually some emails that went to Core about some concern about people thinking we had a hacked distro. So
I suppose it's unexpected.
We dialed it back, but there was a secret committee, you know, that we pushed it through. I wrote the Forth code, you know, I'll admit that, you know. All right, so I'm blameful. Blame you for that. But it's something that will probably scare some people, even in the RC4 standard. And seeing that little chunk there at the bottom of the boot screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be an exciting time for when 10 comes out. You know, we can play with that, be creative. It's just a new thing, new concept for being cute.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's like
something that we have fun. You know, we're not just a bunch of fuddy duddies in the FreeBSD community. You know,
that's right.
Beards and, you know, but we manicure them and we go out to conferences and we chat and we have a sense of humor. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I look forward to seeing that in 10 then.
But yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea what we're going to do for 10.
But I think on my laptop, that 9.2 one will be turned on forever.
Excellent. Now, I heard that PCBSD was cut from RC3, so what did you guys do there?
Well, we've been using Grub on her, so we actually didn't even see it. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you know, I said in the chat rooms, like, let's see Grub do this.
Yeah, that is true. That's something Grub didn't do. Well, hey, if you get this other Forth stuff working, though, you're going to convince me to switch it back. I mean, the only reason we went to Grub is being able to do boot environments out of box is huge.
And, I mentioned at a Bayfug a long time ago that I actually had the code in there ready to go, but, you know, other gremlins ate me and release cycles came up and I'm like, gotta get it out for release, you know?
Yep.
And those freezes happen, it just rocks your world.
Mm-hmm.
So while researching about you a bit, I came across this Druid BSD. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Mm. Oh man. So, it's more of the same thing of what SysRC is a nod to, which is, you know, how to manage thousands of machines within an enterprise. And Druid BSD, you have a field engineer pool where each site may have one or two or three field engineers. But, you know, over the years, it's harder and harder to find field engineers that are just come in with a wealth of knowledge with FreeBSD on their shoulders. Like, no, it's usually trial by fire. It's like, all right. You know, this is the analog from Linux, or, you know, this is what you do, you know, if they're from scratch. So Druid BSD, quite plainly, allows you to install, rescue, or do any number of things, like upgrade, even going in place upgrading from 4.11 to 8.1, any machine with minimal steps. And it's all user interface-based through libdialog, because it was sysinstall-based. Huh. So Druid BSD is still MFS-based. And it's customized down to even the libc is customized. I mean, it takes something like 16 hours to produce a new Druid BSD, but it's all down to 6 keystrokes to install, like 3 keystrokes to rescue a machine. You know, I gave a demonstration of Bayfug once. Mm-hmm. I take my virtual machine and I move the kernel and I reboot. And most people are like, what are you doing? You're crazy. And then within seconds, I'm back. What I do is I boot off of the ISO, and the ISO allows me to bootstrap an entire bash shell off of the kernel that was on the boot media, but either trooted or not trooted into the media that I was in, you know, the media I'm rescuing. So now I've moved my kernel back, and now I reboot, and everything is all hunky-dory. beautiful. Of course, you know, ZFS snapshots would have been better. But what this does, also DruidBSD, is it uses the hybrid ISO mechanism. So that's one of the best things about it. You can take this ISO, one download, and either burn it to a CD or DD it to a thumb drive. The same disk. So it actually supports four different types of medias. And if you extract little pieces like the MFS root, it'll even support a fifth, which is Pixie. So CD, DVD, USB, HDDD, and Pixie. You can take this one ISO, one download, and it doesn't matter. Put it on those media, and then boot off of it. And it works exactly the same way. And it's also chock full of things. See, now how we got that functionality was by using ISO Linux. And ISO Linux has this ISO hybrid script, which used to be Perl, now in C. And you run that on your ISO. And it does, it encapsulates your ISO 9660 volume within an HD volume. So that when you put it on an HD or USB, it's actually going to be invoked by the BIOS as a hard disk. And then ISO Linux then shims you into the ISO 9660 layer, so, which is really, really cute. So it saves you all this time of having to distribute a mem stick, a CD, a DVD, or whatever. You may want to distribute with different ones based on size, because you know, 0.7 gig CD, you don't have that. But ultimately, one image, one distribution, so you'll have much less to worry about with versioning, too. So your release cycle is also less burdened, too. So you just master this one thing, and we've tested it several thousand times, basically. It's working on any machine that's 95 or older. I mean, even the machines older than that, I think we can go find an ATAPI CD-ROM or something like that. So it's really cool.
Oh, that definitely is really cool. It'd be neat to just have one image to test.
I can see the gears in Chris's head going already.
Yeah.
It also
I got more homework to do.
You know, different take on the release cycle, which is that you have the framework, which provides this this magical boot environment. And you don't necessarily want to do a release 7 every time, you know, go through the release 7 man page every time you want to reproduce this. You may want to tweak something in that environment. So we separated the production of what goes in there and the production of the ISO itself. So we have one makefile, which is in the FreeBSD tree, as the release makefile, which produces both the distributions and the binaries that are used on the release media. But then we take those and we actually uplift them into a different sandbox with a different makefile, which actually uses the make ISOFS commands to build this whole thing out of binaries. Yeah, people are going to yell at me right now. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. Binaries and version control. It's like, it works. And it saves me time. And it saves me money. So why not?
Yeah, that definitely sounds intriguing. Well, very cool. I love the explanation on that. It's something I'm going to have to go dig into a little bit after we wrap up the show here.
Yeah. When is the 20th anniversary?
They're having a party in November that IX is.
Yes.
Saturday the 2nd.
You've inspired me. As most of our company is coming off of 4.x, which is not real. We can't call it 4.11. It's like 4.infinity, kind of like Yahoo. But you guys have inspired me. I'm going to make a 4.x Druid, which is quite an amazing thing, which is in our infrastructure that we have. It's a Druid that boots with an 8.x kernel that has a highly modified 4.x kernel with even more things added to the user land. So what we're doing is this same magical boot environment uses ISO Linux and Sys Linux and stuff that can boot from USB and stuff. We shove it into VMs, and we've got 4.11 VMs where we need it, and 4.11 running on like machines that were built 2 years ago that you wouldn't think could ever handle 4.11. It's going to be an anniversary edition, I think.
Cool.
Just to know. Hey, anybody who thinks 4.11 is still rock stable and nice, here you go. Have at it. Here's a nice version with, you know, back ports from 7, back ports from 6, you know, E1000 frameworks with EM drivers, you know, from 7.
Wow, very cool. That'll be the party gift for the evening, right? Hand those out.
Okay. So November 1st, or
Saturday
like that?
The 2nd. Yep.
Saturday the 2nd.
Yep. Very cool.
Hey, that's actually awesome. The same date we had the Dev Summit last year at Yahoo. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, cool. That kind of wraps up all our questions here. Anything else you want to ask, Alan?
So anything else you wanted to tell us, Devin?
Okay.
No, that's it. Had a great time chatting.
Oh, well, excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming on with us. I really enjoyed talking to you, Devin. Looking forward to to seeing you at VBSDCon. I'm going to mess you at Malta, but yeah, we'll enjoy.
I'm sure Chris will have many more questions about some of the things we've talked about.
Yeah. I got to sit down with you and have a little bit more conversation about Forth and other stuff. But yeah, that'll be good.
Excellent. Thanks.
Thanks again.
Thank you guys for watching our interview with Devin Teske this week. We hope you found it interesting and informative. We sure had a lot of fun talking to him. We're still out at EuroBSDCon, of course, so we'll be back next week with a new show and some new material, and I'm sure lots of interviews with developers from there. As usual, all the tutorials, all the information from the show is going to be posted in its entirety at bsdnow.tv. If you have any questions or comments, show ideas, topics, please go ahead and send them to feedback at bsdnow.tv. We don't always check YouTube and comments elsewhere, so that would be the preferred method of getting a hold of us, or Twitter if you'd like to use that. And as usual, watch us live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC.
See you guys next week.